so excited about this program. This is, it's hard to pick, really, but this is a favorite concert of ours because it's all about young talent from all around our general area here in the Tri-Valley. And tonight we have three young soloists making their debut this evening. And what is such a joy for us in this process, which we've been experiencing for the last couple of weeks, is that each of these young men have, we've seen and felt the experience that they're having, the growth and awakening musically, and the process that they go through and the growth they experience with us as we rehearse is so rewarding. It's such a wonderful reminder to us of the importance of offering opportunities like this to young people, and such a privilege for us to be able to do that. And we're so grateful for those of you who support that effort, and something we're very proud to do. And it's, we're having a great time with these three individuals. They're just excellent and wonderful people. So, and on top of that, tonight's the night that Element 116 gives us a miniature concert in the lobby. And I always try to sneak out here just a little bit and sneak back in, but I know how much you all enjoy it, and we're so grateful to them for doing it, bringing us their talents. They're composed of students throughout the Livermore Valley School District, and directed by Matt Finders, who's, you know, as somebody else said, introducing him to a concert recently, he has more talent in his little finger than any of us mere mortals do. So it's a musical youth festival tonight. And we frame this centerpiece of talented young soloists with music about water from wildly different perspectives and equally talented, unique musical voices, Respighi and Britten. So their distinct musical voices and styles bring out every quality that you can find in an orchestra. Respighi's more obvious in the way that he writes his musical ideas to depict these four fountains in Rome. It's very explicit. I mean, you're in your imagination, I'm sure you'll be right there in the scene, as much as if you were standing in front of an impressionistic painting of the same scene. With Britten, it's more subtle. It's equally skilled in his use of the orchestra, but there's also an undercurrent in the music that is all about what's going on in the lives of the characters in the opera from which his sea interludes are taken. So it's really interesting perspective to look at these two composers next to each other. So in the Respighi, I love his name, Ottorino Respighi, the Italian composer. He lived sort of in the later part of the 19th century into the early 20th century, but he had a fondness and a fascination with old music, with ancient music and music from the Renaissance and Baroque periods. He was especially fascinated with dance forms from the Renaissance and Baroque era. Some of you might know his miniature pieces. There's a piece he wrote called Gli Uccelli, The Birds. It's all little songs and dances that were taken from Baroque composers and music of the Renaissance. Similarly with his Trittico Botticelliano, the three Botticelli pictures. He actually takes melodies from lesser known older composers and brings them forward and magically transforms them and orchestrates around them. With this quality, his compositional style so completely marinated in the past, but within this very modern orchestral sensibility, it's just, to me, it brings a quality to his music that no one else has, and it all is steeped a little bit in nostalgia as a result. But he takes us on this journey through the four fountains he chooses to depict in Rome. It's a one through composed piece, so we don't have any breaks in the movements where we go from one fountain to the other. It's continuous through composed music, but you'll know exactly where you are. At the very first fountain is the Valle Giulia at dawn, which is when it's at its most beautiful. So the music is very, very quiet. You can literally hear the sun rising and feel the warmth as the sun is, you know, hitting your skin. There's this, he has the ability to exploit every possible sound that is natural to the instrument he chooses for the melodies he writes. He puts these very long, ethereal melodies in woodwind instruments, and we're so lucky in our orchestra to be blessed with very talented musicians playing these solos and bringing such beauty to the music. These are underscored by counter themes that are not just written for the cellos, but they're underpinned by things like a bass clarinet or a second horn. And this quiet opening reveals the beauty of this first Fountains of Julia. And then you'll know when we arrive at the next one, the Triton, which couldn't be more different. We go from this very quiet beginning to a Triton. So he's a mythical god born of Neptune, right? The fountain itself, he's standing, you know, very muscular torso man with kind of an octopus sort of sea dragon lower half. And you'll hear the horns announce that strength. Bom, 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 and it then explodes in the treble clef. All of the treble clef instruments just, kind of shriek, hooray, it's the Triton Fountain. And then we're off into this little scherzo dance for two harps, not one, but two harps, and the woodwinds. They play this little scherzo duet. So what I'd like you to listen for is the transition between this Fountain, the Julia, at dawn with these very languid woodwind melodies and the quiet of the morning into the arrival of the Triton Fountain. Here you go. Been there. Oh my gosh, you people get around. I'm going on the boat with you. So many of you know that it's very grand, and the theme is clearly the ocean and Neptune in his shell-shaped chariot being pulled through the water. This is where we sort of reach the peak in this musical tour of fountains. The brass really come alive and carry that force and power of the sea and its god, Neptune, right to the front of the music. Medici fountain, and here we return to more really beautiful, languid, sort of melancholic melodies in the woodwinds again. We hear initially from the flute and the English horn, who plays such a role in this beautiful music, that particularly melancholic sound of the English horn is so important in this place in the music, and they play this very long chromatic rising melody over very sparkling short notes played by the celeste. We have not just two harps, but also piano and celeste in this piece. So the celeste and the harp play these sparkling notes as these long evening melodies come back, and the musical atmosphere is just loaded with the feeling of oncoming night, the distant tolling of bells, twittering of the last, you know, when, as you're falling asleep, you can hear one more bird chirping something out. It's all there, this rich, impressionistic sound of this fountain at sunset.
Of an
isolated seagull or seabird or some such thing, or the interplay of sunlight on ocean waves, or moonlight on the sort of throbbing undulation of the sea, and then you're cast out in the most violent musical storm, the most virtuosic violent orchestral storm you'll ever hear. So they're both at the same time. It's the ocean, the sea is the main character of Peter Grimes, as is Peter Grimes. So what I'd like to do is just give you a sense of how these interludes fit into the story. So I'm going to play for you just the very end of the prologue. Peter Grimes is at an inquest, sort of a hearing, to determine whether he is responsible for the death of the young boy who was his apprentice, who died of thirst while under his charge. And everyone assumes his guilt, and in the minds of the town and most everyone, he is guilty and a pariah and should be already cast out. Ellen is the only one who really will stick up for him. Nobody can prove that it was his responsibility, and so he's not found guilty, but judgment is cast. And at the end of this prologue, Ellen is hopeful that he can start over, and he reflects that desire, but is a little bit less hopeful than she, and they sing together, "My voice out of the pain is like a hand that I can feel and know. Here is a friend." And that is Ellen and Peter reaching to each other. This music, listen to the vocal line, it is all centered around a half step. La, da, 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 da. And if you take a half step and make a very isolated, lonely leap up, it's a ninth. La, la, da. So this half step idea throughout Britain's music, to me, represents the anguish and anxiety of Grimes. It's constant foreboding and foreshadowing of what's to come. And when it's a leap like that, it's his isolation completely apart from everyone else. Then, as they finish that line, we arrive at dawn, which is the first interlude before Act One, and you'll hear that the violins and flutes take that line and it becomes that call of the seagull. And you'll hear that half step, la-dee-da, and you'll hear another leap of isolation. That's one segment, and then there's another segment, which are the clarinets and violas, just them, and they kind of have a fluttering, rising motive. Could be the sunlight playing with the water, or the first foam of the sea splashing up onto the sand, or it could be the whispering voices of a very judgmental community. And then we have the brasses and the low strings clearly demonstrating that at any time the power of the ocean could overwhelm you. And that is metaphorically also the mob mentality of the quiet judgment of the town. So here is the end of the prologue and the beginning of dawn.
Thank you.
be very uncomfortable. It's the opposite of what major triads make most people feel, but there's something about major triads in Britain because they come with that dissonance attached. So we move from there to the transition between Act One and Act Two. It's Sunday morning, and it's a bright, sunny day. The mood couldn't be more different from dawn. You'll hear the big, bold sounds in the brass instruments, and this very angular, sort of hyperactive melody in the woodwinds. It's later played by the trumpets as well, and it's the energy and bustle of the town in the morning. There's text that goes along with some of these melodies. That's just, you know, now it's time to go into church now. You know, that kind of dialogue. It's all in D major, a very bright key, and he juxtaposes this D major with interruptions in B flat, which is a very, very different feeling. Also a major key, but it's darker, rounder, fuller, lower in the orchestra. And again, we're foreshadowing, even though it's this bright D major Sunday morning, something bad is gonna happen, you know, because of these punctuations of B flat. And at the very, very end of this Sunday morning, there's an aria that's sung, or sort of arioso, that's sung by Ellen, who is, you know, going to church, seeing the bright sunny day, trying to bring out the best in people, and she sings, glitter of waves and glitter of sunlight, bid us rejoice and lift our hearts on high. And I think this is very important. Man alone has a soul to save, and goes to church to worship on a Sunday. She's looking to the positive, trying really hard to rally people together. And you'll hear at the very end of Sunday morning a lonely clarinet with this half step. Dee-doo-dee-doo-dee-doo-dee. Again, another half step. So here's what Sunday morning sounds like. Water. Britain uses sort of the absence of a feeling of rhythmic pulse to give us that unsteady, it's everything happens on the end of a beat instead of on the beat. And it creates this rocking sensation. You'll hear that, and then you'll hear sudden little bursts of light that come from xylophone and harp and two flutes and a trumpet. And at first it just sounds like, oh, it's something bright and sparkly. And then as we get further into this movement, you realize there's something kind of not very nice about these sparkles of light. They keep poking us. There's something to this that we don't understand yet. This is moonlight. And then finally, we have the storm, which in the opera actually occurs earlier in the story. But it is the most violent of musical storms and truly virtuosic for the orchestra to play. You'll hear every kind of battering you can take from a stormy sea. But suddenly, in the middle of it, we come to almost a halt, and everything stops, and we hear the music. That's like that moment in a storm where suddenly the sun comes out and you think, oh my God, okay, I can go out now and pull my garbage cans in from the curb or whatever. It's that respite where suddenly you think you're okay. This music is sung earlier in the opera and near the very end of the opera by Grimes. He sings the words as he is seeking some sort of relief from this situation he finds himself in. He asks, what harbor shelters peace? Away from tidal waves, away from storm. What harbor can embrace terrors and tragedies? With her there'll be no quarrels, with her the mood will stay. A harbor evermore, where night is turned to day. And so when he asks, what harbor shelters peace? It's again, it's not a minor second, it's a major one. But again, he's making that big isolated leap. And the orchestra makes that leap with him. And I just want to play you this moment. It's kind of one of the signature moments for the character of Peter Grimes.
Thank you.
said that Shostakovich's music spoke to him like no other composers did. The same was true for Shostakovich of Britten. The connective tissue between the two of them was Rostropovich, who premiered the cello concerto that you'll hear the first movement of tonight. And as you know, Shostakovich was a composer in the Soviet Union at a time when individuality of expression that was not necessarily in full-throated support of the government was oppressed. So he found really interesting ways of getting himself out through the music. And in this particular movement, he puts his own initials in the theme that the cello plays, bum, 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 bum. It's D, the notes D, E flat, C, and B natural, which are D for Dmitri, and then S, E is another form of the note E. For S, his first initial of Shostakovich, C and H is the B natural. Clever, and you'll hear that answered by the woodwinds. And before that, you hear Mozart talk about an example of talented musical youth. It's very refreshing to hear him after Respighi, who's looking backward in time. And then, of course, we'll open the second half with perhaps the longest melody you've ever heard in your life, the opening of the Rachmaninoff Second Piano Concerto, first movement. You know, ta da 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 dee da 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 da. Sing it with me. Ta. Wonderful piece, and it's the first product of his compositional talent after a long period of silence. He was such a self-critical person and had been so criticized in the press, he was thrown into a depression. And the first thing he came back as with was that piece. Pretty astounding to hear. So I've gone on way too long. You need a break before we start. It's a pleasure to have so many of you with us. Thank you for listening. And hoping to